Welcome to Albuquerque Theatre Guild's weekly podcast. I'm Mike Miller, and I'm your host. Join us every Monday morning for a new episode. This is where we'll tell you what's happening in performance in Albuquerque. We'll keep a running calendar of shows opening and closing, and talk to interesting people involved in entertainment here. This week, our special guests are Jessica Quinlan and Tyler Cable, starring in Bonnie and Clyde at Musical Theater Southwest. But before we get to Jessica and Tyler, let's look at what's on stage now and what's coming up. Theater Grotesco's Pie continues its run at the Q Staff Theater through the 27th. Florian Zeller's The Father continues its run through February 4th at the Vortex. Q Solo at the Oxdog runs through the 28th. The Adobe Theater opened its 2018 season with Double Wide Texas. That continues through February 11th. Frank Wildhorn's musical version of Bonnie and Clyde opens February 2nd at MTS Center for Theater and runs through February 25th. And on January 26th, Albuquerque Little Theater opens a three-week run of Wait Until Dark. Siembra Latino Theater opens its season on February 1st at the National Hispanic Cultural Center with playwright Patricia Crespin's El Corrido de Jorge. Also, on February 1st, Popejoy brings in the Russian National Ballet Theater's Swan Lake. Upcoming auditions include Shakespeare's Measure for Measure at the Oxdog on January 30th and 31st, and the Adobe will be accepting appointments for audition on February 10th. Also on February 10th are music auditions at MTS for Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. For times, tickets, and or information on any of these events, please revisit the Albuquerque Theater Guild's website at www.abqtheatre.com. That's www.abqtheatre.com. And now we want to ask Bonnie and Clyde stars Jessica Quinlan and Tyler Cable to join us as our special guests today. We're talking today with Jessica and with Tyler, and they are the stars of Bonnie and Clyde, the musical. Somehow that doesn't quite ring.
It works.
It really works when you see
it's not campy or hokey at all.
Aha, uh-huh. So this is, we'll get to that. Let's talk about you guys first. Ladies first, if you don't mind.
No, of course not.
All right. Tell me a little bit about your background and how you came to Bonnie and Clyde.
My background? Well, I'm originally from the East Coast. I was born outside of Philadelphia, and I lived all around Pennsylvania and New England growing up. I moved here the first time in 2012, right after college. And I lived here for 3 years. I did 16 productions, a couple of movies and shorts. And then I worked at Albuquerque Little Theater and with Mother Road Theater Company and at Soul Acting Academy. And then I left in 2015 for a couple years, lived on the East Coast in Manhattan and Philadelphia and worked in theater there. And I just got back in August. And this is actually the first show I came up for. And I got it.
Time out. 3 years you did. How many shows?
16.
16 shows in 3 years. As an actress or?
As an actress. Yeah, okay. So if you count shows that I worked on, it's over 20 at least.
Wow, mm-hmm. That's a busy schedule for 3 years.
It was very, very busy, nonstop. It was great. It was really great.
What shows did you do? Sampling. Of course.
Well, my first show was Jewel in the Manuscript at the Adobe. And then some highlights. I was Inga in Young Frankenstein at ALT. I was Sandy in Grease. I was Judy Haynes in White Christmas. I was Little Red in Into the Woods. And then I was Alice in Alice in Wonderland. And then I did four plays with Mother Road Theater.
All right.
There's a little highlight of what some of the stuff I did.
So our local audiences are going to recognize you when they see you on stage.
They should. Well, I did just dye my hair a very dark red, so I'm a little unrecognizable, but they may know my name for sure. Yes.
Well, certainly it rang a bell when I heard it.
Thank you. Yes.
And Tyler, what about you? What's your background?
I am actually, born and raised in Vegas, but I've been in Denver for about 6 years now. And I drove down here on a whim, auditioned for Bonnie and Clyde, and got Clyde.
Well, very good. Yeah. So what is your theatrical background?
Goodness. I've been doing theater and theater-esque things, performing things since I was about 6 years old. But I've only gotten like super serious about theater in the past about 6 years down in Denver. And in that time I've done close to 100 shows. Yeah.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Yeah.
He makes me look lazy.
Yeah. close to 100. I usually typically do at least 10 productions a year. I try to aim for 12 to 13.
As an actor?
As an actor.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And are you doing film?
There's not a huge film market in Denver right now. So I've auditioned for I've done some student films and stuff like that, but nothing.
Mm-hmm. You haven't driven to Albuquerque to audition for the big film scene here?
Nope, not yet.
Okay, I'm getting that there may be a little more than just a whim to your being here.
there was a girl that...
There's always a girl.
There's a girl down in Denver. Just extenuating circumstances, kind of fate led me here to, we had a fight and I drove down here to kind of cool off and that just happened.
Well then.
Yeah.
So much for Albuquerque Theater Guild's Peyton Place, for those of our audience old enough to remember it. An old television show was a soap opera at night that had stories that went on somewhat like that. But, feel free not to answer anything I ask that you don't want to answer.
It's all good.
All right. So what do you think perhaps are your favorite performances?
Some of my highlights, I guess. Some of my best roles include, I would say, Moritz in Spring Awakening. I was Romeo in Romeo and Juliet. I was the MC in Cabaret. I did a few new plays, originated some roles. I was Emmett in Legally Blonde. Bobby Strong in Urinetown, some of my favorites. I also actually have a theater company down in Denver called Fearless Theater.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you do street theater?
Yeah. Our company and me as well, I guess. We do musicals, straight plays, Shakespeare, and original work.
Mm-hmm. And do you take it to the streets?
To the streets. We've done, some marketing stuff, in the streets, but nothing.
Okay. Have you seen James Gordon's Crosswalk?
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm. Crosswalk Theater, yeah.
Absolutely, yes.
That I saw Hugh Jackman's version of that the other night.
Yeah.
That's a little interesting. And the reason I ask is that times are very similar to when I grew up and started basically as an adult theater person. Mm-hmm. I, too, have a long-standing entertainment family. But... I was part of a group in southern New Mexico that literally did street theater, is what we called it, where we would take issues of the day and confront people on the street. And when you said the name of your theater, Fierce Theater,
mm-hmm.
Fierce Theater, it sort of rang a bell that maybe that's what you guys were doing. Times are right for that, and so I'm surprised I don't see as much of it as I would expect.
I think there's this new trend in theater that's been going on that... everybody's been kind of super excited about, which is funny because I feel like we've been doing it for 6 years. Mm-hmm. But it's called micro theater, It's just like a super. It reminds me of your street theater. It's not on the streets or anything, but just in like in unconventional places. Super stripped down theater, usually like with like not a whole lot of like production value, but focusing more on the quality of the work, I guess, and like the message and the tone and stuff of what it wants to say.
So the plays that you're referring to are not shorter necessarily.
But oh, no, no,
they've
no.
just done without all of the accoutrement you find in most theater.
Exactly.
Today.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So what are you producing? What's on your schedule this year?
For my company, we are launching this new idea. It's called Defiance. It's a 3-season arc. Each season will represent a volume, per se. The first one is Fearless Theater Presents Defiance, Volume 1, Upheaval. So we are doing King Lear is our first show.
Wow.
And then a play called Bent. Mm-hmm. And then Hair, the musical.
Mm-hmm.
And then an original piece written by a wonderful human being up in Denver called Mosque. And it's just the whole idea of it is just like making theater say something, especially with like kind of like the times of what's going on right now, you know, like where our country's at, just like there's all this pressure and heat that's going on. So we want to make sure that everything that we do has a meaning and has like a voice, per se.
Nice. Yep. And so, Jessica, are you going to stay in Albuquerque, or are you going to help with this massive endeavor?
I'm in Albuquerque for now. Life has taken me in many directions, and I feel like you can't really ever plan. But I have no, I'm here right now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm here for the foreseeable future, yes. Very but, good. You know.
Well, let's move to local theater.
Yeah, yes, 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 please.
Theoretically.
What we're here for.
Yeah. And what our audience is most interested in. We do have a lot of people who go back and forth between Albuquerque and Denver, so there's something for them to look forward to when they go to Denver. On the other hand, we have a show coming up at Musical Theater Southwest called Bonnie and Clyde.
Yes.
And you are Bonnie and Clyde.
We sure are Bonnie and Clyde.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Bonnie and Clyde. Yes.
All right. So let's talk about the show first and your process as we get into it. What tell us about Bonnie and Clyde, maybe a little historically.
Sure.
And maybe how it got transmuted into a musical.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, originally or historically, you know, Bonnie, I can speak more about Bonnie than I can about Clyde.
Sure.
Bonnie Parker, she was born and raised in Texas, and she never had money. She lost her dad when she was young. She had a sister, and then she lived with her mom, and it was the Dust Bowl, and it was the Depression, and they struggled. And she was a waitress, and she worked and tried to bring money for the family. And she met Clyde through a friend, and they pretty much fell in love at first sight. Most people speak to that. They both spoke to that. It was pretty instantaneous. And they were, I don't know, in love and devoted to each other, and their life of crime began pretty quickly. Clyde had kind of already been a criminal. Fun fact about Bonnie, we this is discussed in the musical, she was actually married when she was 16. His name was Roy. And she married him young, and he ended up going to prison, and they actually never saw each other again. But technically, they never divorced. And when she died, she was actually wearing the wedding ring from Roy. So there, you know, there's that element to her that she did have this sort of previous love, but Clyde was her ultimate complete devotion. And yeah, and she went to prison and you know, struggled with them, but she was a product of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't a lot of other options.
Yeah, they both were.
Yeah. Yeah, they both were, absolutely. And I'll let you speak more about Clyde.
a super similar upbringing. His family was in farming, and then when the Dust Bowl happened, they moved to West Dallas, lived in extreme poverty. And back in that time, I mean, as far as, like, from what's been told and everything like that, it seems like they were, I mean, they did get into trouble, him and his brother, Buck, but also were kind of picked on just because of just class lines and everything like that.
Socioeconomic status,
And almost everything that I've read about them has just kind of concluded that really there was no other option.
Right. For them. They were not evil people. They were products of what happened to them and what was surrounding them. And then it eventually got to a place where it was so deep that there was no
way to turn.
Yeah. Okay. There was no option. You know, they'd gone too far to just turn themselves in and be fine. And Clyde had a very horrific experience in prison.
Yes.
So it also became that prison was not an option. Yeah. So it was survive or die.
Yeah, because there was
no in between.
He was in and out of jail quite a few times, and then he got sent to what prison?
Easton Penitentiary.
There he was not only beat by the guards, but he was also raped by a fellow inmate. And fun fact about Clyde is it's believed. I don't know if it's specifically proven yet.
Which thing? I don't know.
About him, the person he first killed.
Oh, yes, it's not, but they're pretty sure, because the person he was raped by was eventually murdered, and they're...
One of the inmates who was in there for life took the rep for it, but it's believed that it was actually Clyde, because the person that was murdered was a person that raped Clyde. And so it is believed that that was actually his first kill.
His first kill, right. Mm-hmm. And again, like, that became... It became such a big thing for him to not... to never go back to prison. And in fact, he had a big hatred of law enforcement because of this experience, which of course spilled out into myself as, you know, Bonnie and Buck and Blanche, his brother and his brother's wife. So, you know, towards the end, you know, us running and shooting up the cops, a lot of it was just, we're not going back to prison. So it's either we die or we get out of here. Yeah. So yeah, that's the real Bonnie.
So Bonnie was in prison also?
Yes. Bonnie did go to prison, yes.
Something that's not shown, actually,
it's
in
not
the
as
musical,
shown in the musical, but yes, but she did go to prison, actually. Kind of early in their relationship, she was arrested and she went to prison for a little while.
Because she took the rep for Clyde.
Yeah, she took the rep. A lot of us did that. Yeah. She wasn't in prison too terribly long.
She didn't even get sentenced.
No.
She was in jail until her hearing.
Yeah.
And then she got acquitted.
So it wasn't a long time, but she was, you know, taken for, you know, better or worse or whatever. I was going to say something and it left. It'll come back to me. Something about the two of them.
And,
so their portrayal in the media. Go ahead. I was just going to talk about that. No, I was going to say, so something that was very well known about Bonnie that's very much addressed in the musical, she wanted to be a movie star. She wanted to be famous. She wanted to be a singer and a poet and an actress. So they were certainly glamorized in the media. And at one point, they got a hold of a camera and took fun photos of themselves, them with guns. And, I mean, these are very famous photos. Mm-hmm. You know, she has a cigar in one of them. And these photos, one time when they were leaving because they were ambushed, they just left everything. And one of the things that they left were all these photos. And the press got a hold of them, and they were published. And once again, we were sort of... you know, idolized and glamorized in the media as this, you know, these two lovers and XYZ. And then eventually the media sort of turned on us when two state troopers were murdered.
Which
they said, the media said it was him and I, that we were out in our car making love and having lunch, and these cops came upon us not knowing it was us, and we just cold-blooded killed them.
Sure.
And then the collective public sort of turned against us. That is not true, however. That is not what happened.
It was just found out as of recently that, because a bunch of files from the federal FBI got released.
Were released.
And it was found out that there was actually a conspiracy to get the public to turn against Bonnie and Clyde. It was actually one of their...
one of our gang members.
Yes.
His family sort of made a deal with law enforcement. So the deal was partially that they would keep him out of any sort of press. And then he would capture. Yeah, in turn, he would sort of trick us into being like, oh, we're going to meet so-and-so at this location. And that's what happened. And it was us alone in the car driving, and that's how we were murdered, as we were tricked into.
And the two officers who were actually killed by that same
guy. Yeah, they were killed by that guy. They weren't killed by us. There's actually a huge speculation that Bonnie Parker never killed anyone. Yeah. And there's no proof that she did. There's no proof that she didn't, but there's no definitive proof that she actually murdered anyone.
All right, I'm getting a little timeline confusion.
You're fine. Yeah, yeah. We kind of just went all over the place. Okay, so you're fine.
All right, it occurs to me that the troopers were killed on the same day Bonnie and Clyde were killed.
No. They were killed on Easter. The Easter of the same year that Bonnie and Clyde were killed.
Right. They were killed a few months before us, but it was all a part of this scheme. Because we were loved by the public and we were signing autographs and
Robin
things.
Robin Hood, kind
right.
of. Like.
Right. And so it was partially them trying to spin that. So then everyone started to be more and more against us. And then we had a few more months left in our lives. It took a while for the cops. And one thing that's interesting that we found out in our research is part of that was there was no national police force. There was nothing. So we would cross state lines and that was it. They didn't talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So it was actually a lot easier for us to survive as long as we did than it probably would be for someone today.
And one of the conspiracies actually is that Bonnie and Clyde, as well as like Al Capone and like all those big gangsters of the day, were actually the main reason the FBI exists today.
Yeah. It's why it was created.
Because of... vigilantes.
But Robin Hood type criminals or idolized criminals who could just cross state lines and all of a sudden it was like a clean slate.
Yeah.
And if we hadn't had our pictures published, we probably would have survived longer.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
But we started to be recognized, which is dangerous when you're a criminal.
Particularly if you're robbing banks and murdering people.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Public sooner or later doesn't take kindly to that.
No.
All right, well, tell us about the production.
The musical, it opened on Broadway in 2012?
I was going to say eight. No, yeah, it was 2012.
It was 2012, right.
Written by
Frank Wildhorn.
Frank Wildhorn.
Who did Jekyll and Hyde, which was just produced at ALT. Mm-hmm. Or, I'm sorry, MTS, Musical Theater Southwest. I'm sorry. It takes the story of Bonnie and Clyde, and it certainly takes historic liberties, just as every portrayal of them ever has. We've seen them all. You know, nothing is ever truthful, and it certainly takes its own liberties. But it follows us, actually, from when we're kids. Mm-hmm. It doesn't spend a lot of time on our childhood, but it does start with us as children.
Exposition.
And, yeah, and then we grow up, and it goes from us meeting to our death.
And that's not a romanticized...
It's incredibly romanticized.
Yeah.
It's all about our love and our relationship together. And it's certainly a very romantic, sexy retelling of us. Yeah. And it's, you know, there's not really a gang. It's very much Bonnie and Clyde versus the world.
How many people in the cast?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
I don't know.
Oh, 20?
Let's say 20? Close to 20.
Let's say somewhere around 20. There's a large ensemble, and I'd say there's at least six, you know,
principals,
and then a few supporting, and then I'd say we're in around 20. I don't want to lie, but somewhere in that number. It's definitely a significant
seven.
Cast.
You don't have 20 fingers and toes you could count them all off.
No.
It would take me a second to start double counting.
Well, that's what I have to do sometimes. And so.
No, for sure.
No, hard. At least I'm not making you name them all.
No,
this is true.
Yeah.
That would not be a fun test.
Well, and the funny thing about, I mean, like the way the show's like kind of like written and everything, we are almost ostracized from the ensemble. I have not, we spent like what, two rehearsals with them?
We don't really actually talk to a lot of people. Especially Act Two is pretty much just the two of us.
Yeah.
Together. I mean, you see other things happening, but it's like Bonnie and Clyde scene, everyone else. Bonnie and Clyde scene, everyone else. So, we certainly are kind of ostracized from the cast.
So, it's come from Broadway, and you guys are charged with bringing the history to life and also bringing the romance to life.
Yes.
And death.
Yes.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
What's your process in that? How do you come to these characters?
Well, early on, actually, one of our first rehearsals together, our first rehearsal our first together, rehearsal. We was just to sit down, me and her and the director, and we talked about, like, we'd done all of our most of our research, read books, watched every, you know, movie that there was.
Some documentaries of them, as well.
Documentaries as well.
The director is who, before we get
Brandon McDaniel.
Okay.
And then we all got together, and then we kind of, like, talked about who these characters were in real life. And then we talked about who these characters were in the show, because they are not vastly different, but I would say, like, I mean, they're romanticized caricatures of who Bonnie and Clyde actually were. Mm-hmm. And we all agreed that we would stay true to the writing of the show, because, I mean, it would be hard to mesh a character or a real person, a super incredibly complex person, into writing that doesn't necessarily fit that
person. Absolutely. We want to be genuine.
So we decided to stay true to what the actual script kind of says about us.
And a big agreement, you know, that Tyler and I and with Brandon as well came to with these characters, building on that, is we really wanted to make sure, though, because the musical does do this, is portray that they were a product of their time, that they were not these two evil geniuses or whatever, what have you, that they were simply a product of this horrid time, and they followed a path, and then the path just flew them in a direction.
Yeah.
But yes, a lot of research was the beginning of our process. Yeah. And then Tyler and I, we just kind of clicked as co-stars.
Yeah, and we've clicked at callbacks.
Yeah, we clicked at callbacks, and so we've just had a very easy relationship, falling in love and being comfortable, which as an actor, you either get or you don't, you know? You can't fake it. Well, you can. I mean, you have to be intimate and open. Right. You have to be intimate and open, and we respect each other, and we've both been doing this a really long time, which I think helps.
No.
Because this isn't the first time that either of us have had to, you know, simulate love or romance or death on stage. So yeah, I think that was our biggest process. And then of course there's the basics of learning your lines and your music and, you know, rehearsing and voice lessons and all that other fun actor stuff.
All the stuff that goes with it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. So when does it open?
We open Friday, February 2nd.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it runs through
February 25th.
February 25th.
Mm-hmm.
Is it at?
It's at the Musical Theater Southwest Black Box. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 and Sundays at 2:00 p.m.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I grew up. I was born in 1949. Grew up in the 1950s as part of that generation, learning about all of the gangsters.
All the gangsters. Yes.
You know, and it was always fascinating to me as a child, and then as I got a little bit older, started figuring out what was really happening.
Yeah. Yes. No. And it's super glamorized, and like in reality, I mean, like I feel. One of the funny things that I found in research is, like, and we talked about this, was, like, the public thought that they were living these lavish, beautiful lives, and they were literally sleeping in the car 24/7.
Yeah, like five people in a tiny car and weren't showering and sometimes sleeping in the woods. I mean, we were in no way were living a glamorous life.
No.
And we would get wounded and we just have to, like, and they kind of allude to this in the show, you know, we just have to heal each other because we can go to a hospital or a doctor and then just drive with bullet wounds and are in various places and in a dirty car filled with guns. And yeah, we didn't live glamorously.
No.
For sure.
No. And there was really no way out of it either.
Right. Because we couldn't stay with people because they knew who we were.
I'm curious about something, and I want to mention it simply because we may have other young actors listening. You are referring to these people as we, as opposed to they. Why?
Yeah.
I can't speak for you, but I'm assuming, as an actor, being the way I was trained, but also just the way I think, I am Bonnie. Because if she's something else, then how can I be real? How can I be natural? How can I portray this in a way that makes the audience believe? I want the audience to feel, and they're not going to feel that if it's not me and we.
Yeah,
I mean, I've always been trained that it's me. You know, I'm tired. I'm this. I love Clyde.
I mean,
she loves Clyde.
Yeah, I've been in rehearsal processes where the director from the get-go is like, from first day rehearsal, is like, all right, we're going to talk about our characters, and from this point forward, you will refer to them as, you know, first person. Like, it's you. You are that character. And there are many different ways to approach acting.
Absolutely.
Many different techniques. I don't know which you...
I mean, I don't have a specific technique.
Sure, nobody really does.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I've studied Meisner, and I've studied Uta Hagen, and I've studied at the Barrow Group, and in Manhattan, and the Walnut. But I've never actually been trained not to refer to myself as I when I'm speaking about a character. Well, and also, as an actor, I like to find parallels, because I personally, absolutely. And I'm sure I'm speaking for you as well, have never killed somebody, and I've never robbed a bank, and I've never robbed a convenience store. But Bonnie has, and Bonnie did, so I did. So I have to find the parallels of her emotions and what she's going through. So, you know, I can't think of something specific right now, but, you know, it's like, you know, when you play a villain or something, you know what I mean? Like, any actor who plays a villain and they've murdered 1,000 people, most likely they haven't done that. But they might be able to find something related to that in their life that that distills that emotion in them. But yes, I always refer to myself as me or I.
We.
We. Us. It's also an easier conversation to have.
It is.
When we're talking.
Yeah.
It's just an easier conversation when it's just you and... Yeah, because it kind of is you in a way. I mean, it's our bodies moving around and doing and saying the words. And
us and for another month and a half.
Exactly, yes. Got another 6 weeks.
Yeah.
It very much is. And it's the sort of, it's the direction that I appreciate much with acting, both as an actor and a director and producer, is the reality that comes with understanding that you are for that moment. For that period of time, and at least while you're on stage, there is no separation. Little personal opinion injected into our program here this morning.
No,
and you are fine.
But that's an important concept. So the next question is: having said you studied Meisner and others, how far do you carry that outside of the time on stage? Are you method actors? Where are the characters?
I'm personally not a method actor. I can click out of something very quickly. Some people are. We very much are people who can snap into it. At least I feel like pretty quickly. I mean, some moments you need to take some time. I'm not saying I could cry right now in a millisecond, but I'm not being Bonnie Parker in my whole life. If we were, both of us would be speaking like this entire interview.
Which definitely does happen.
Which definitely does happen sometimes when we're practicing. No, I mean, I would say it translates in my life. I mean, I teach acting to kids, and so I'm always thinking through things, and I'm always thinking about a role when I'm in it. You know, Bonnie's always on my mind if I'm not running lines or just thinking about songs, but I'm not a method actor. I don't know if you've ever been a method actor. I've actually never even tried it, to be honest.
I mean, like, I definitely, like, I would consider myself a method actor, just in the, like, not, like, the actual sense of method acting, but in the, like, glamorized American sense of method acting, because there is vast differences between the two. To where, like, what I do is... Like, I'll do, like, small, tiny things that, like, I'll change in myself. Like, I'll, like, start wearing clothes that, you know, like, are similar to what he would wear in that time, or listen to music that I feel like he would listen to nowadays, to where, like, I would just kind of, like, tweak myself to be closer to that person, which I feel like is, like, the Hollywoodized version.
No, and I think I can relate to that more. When I think of method, I think of, like, living and breathing Bonnie Parker, right? Yeah. And I definitely have things like that. And one thing he and I were joking about the other night is in the show, we call each other baby and sugar, like, constantly. And I realize I call everyone baby. Like, everyone, my boyfriend, my friends, him, like, everyone's baby. I'm like, hi, baby, how are you? And I'm at the gas station. Like, so there are things for sure that you don't even realize until the other night we were joking. And all of a sudden I was like, I called a waiter baby. And he's like, what are you calling him baby for? And I'm like, I don't know. Everyone's baby. I don't know. So, yeah, I mean, little things like that for sure.
You could get away with that.
Thank you. I've gotten away with it so far.
No, he and I could not.
No, if you start calling people sugar, no, that's true. That's very true.
Well, yes. Okay. Well, we open on February 2nd.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
At the
very soon.
At the Black Box.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so tell me a little bit about some of the surrounding support you have, the technical stuff. What's gone into that? It sounds, honestly, having done shows with MTS in the past myself, and having videotaped archival copies of things for a long, long time. I've seen stuff on Popejoy.
Yes.
Which is a really large stage.
So it's about 2,000 people.
Yeah. And that's today.
DCPA.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's, we're educating our Denver guy here.
Yep.
Yeah.
but then they've played other venues, the Highland, and they've played the African American Cultural Center. And, and then they have taken some of these shows that I thought probably needed to be performed on a larger stage and done very well with them in the Black Box. And, of course, other theaters in town have done very well with similar shows
in
the Black Box.
For sure.
But it always takes some creative support to do that.
So absolutely.
Talk absolutely,
a little bit about
yeah.
your support people. Tech, sound, lights.
well, we haven't seen all of our technical elements yet.
Yeah,
we're still
we just
about
got our
2-3 weeks out. We just got our set. Of course, we know conceptually what we're to expect. I personally do love a Black Box setting.
Me too.
Yes, there's nothing like performing in front of 500, 1,000 people. Don't get me wrong, but the intimacy of a Black Box and the realism that it brings is very exciting as an actor. And this show, in particular,
lends
itself
to
Black Box because it is very rooted in reality. And the songs, it's not very like, da-da-da-da-da-da, we're singing. It's very much motivated by emotion.
Jazz square.
Exactly. It's very much, I mean, in fact, we have a, when we argue, we sing. And it's like it comes over us and we just, I have to sing it, you know, because I can't speak to you.
Yeah, well, there's actually one of my favorite quotes. That you just reminded me of, that I've kind of like rooted into my acting sense, because I very much and myself am not a typical musical theater actor by any means. Like, I'm not the big like showy like, ah, here's a big smile. Like, that's not me. I'm very like grounded and rooted and very like naturalistic in my acting. And one thing that like always helps me is when emotions become too strong for words, you sing. And when emotions become too strong for voice, you dance.
Oh, my God. I love that. Oh, that's fabulous.
So, and I feel like with this show, that's exactly what it is. Because it's not like, here's a big musical number so, you know, we can wow you with, like, amazing dancing, which there is, but like it's not like that's not what's at the forefront. What's at the forefront is like what this song is saying,
right?
Because there's no song in the show that doesn't move the plot forward. It just becomes those moments are so intense that you have to sing about it.
I agree. Yeah, and our technical elements, our set is pretty big. It's that we're on an angle, so it's a proscenium, but we're
half of that
angled
space,
right, where half the space is us and half is the audience, and we're in on a raised sort of platform stage, and we have these different walls that move in and out to establish different locations, because the play moves,
it moves so
very
fast.
Quickly to reveal cars and rooms and bedrooms and XYZ. So that's a big part of it, and then projections are a big element of this show. So while things are happening, there'll be projected images of real photos of us and real newspaper clippings of what we're talking about and all those kind of things. You know, as far as music, it is we do have a live pit. It's not a canned CD or anything. We do have musicians that will be there, which for me is beyond exciting. There's nothing like performing with
especially
live musicians.
Especially the score.
Lights, I'm not sure exactly what we're
like
getting, but, you know, a
like
lot of, you know, light will be a big part of the show for us to establish time of day and intimacy and, you know,
change of scenes. Because a lot of times, like, there'll be, like, a scene happening right here, and then, like, almost immediately a scene happens right here. And it's all, rather than having a huge, like, set, like, all
right,
here's a big set change.
Right.
It's going to be a lighting change.
Yeah.
Which is great for a Black Box setting.
And then one of the biggest, most exciting things is that we are using blank rounds in the show. We have real guns with blank rounds that my baby here will be shooting quite a lot.
Yes, I will.
So
are you issuing,
like, 14
earplugs
times,
for the audience?
That is an
know.
MTS question.
Yeah, I have no idea.
It's not terribly loud.
It's
we
not.
Did
we,
shoot
we
it
We tested
the other
them
day.
The other day. And I mean, like, me at, like, I mean, like, I'm holding the gun and at close range. And, like, I was like, ah.
And we both
nothing.
Weren't deaf after the fact. So I don't want to deter anyone. But it's exciting as actors because They're heavy. They are heavy guns, and they are real.
We had to do our photo shoot, and they were just like, all right, hold out your guns, like, the entire time. We're like, ugh, so 30 seconds
went
by.
Got a nice arm workout. Yes. But, yeah, as far as props go, they are really working to get us everything very period.
Yes.
From guns and our purses and journals and... They're working really hard. Our costumes are beautiful. We're a little obsessed with them. We just tried them on, and they're gorgeous. So, and then, I dyed my hair. So I'm usually a blonde, and I'm not anymore. So, yeah. I don't know if that answers your question 20 minutes later. The technical elements are really exciting, and we're getting more and more stuff every day, which is just, again, always just, as an actor, is just great.
Well, to answer the question, you certainly did, because I really...
Good.
Really only wanted to point out to the audience that it takes a lot
so
of...
So much.
A lot of people, particularly if you've got a cast of 20 people.
Absolutely, yes.
And you've got live music, and you've got a set that's that complicated in a space the size of a black box theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It takes a village.
It does.
It takes a village.
So I'm kind of funny about that. Any one person missing could... alter the whole show.
Absolutely, for sure.
So everybody is important in that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to see that they've paid attention to that.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes. So, and I'm always someone who just appreciates every human being because we all can't function without each other. You know, and the moments, you just can't.
Even down to the people that came before us.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Designers and directors and all of them, the people who created this show, and then all the ensemble and all the people backstage who are going to be handing water bottles and doing our quick changes and and the people who have scenes when we're not on stage so that we can grab a drink of water.
Thank you.
We love you. Yeah, it's always amazing for how long we've been doing this that every time it's always just like, wow. It's a lot of people, and it's really magical how much everyone is a cog in this machine. And yet the audience is just like, oh, things are happening, and it's magic. And little do they know that there's 6 people doing this and 10 people doing that and someone on headset and my shoe flew off backstage and you didn't even know it. And, you know, that's why live theater, I think, is just the most exciting form of entertainment.
Agreed.
For both the people on stage and off stage.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
And the people in the audience.
Yes.
Yes.
Because there's something exciting about live. Because no one will get the same show.
No.
No one will get the exact same show ever.
Not even in the same audience. Because, you'll see...
It's true. You'll see different angles. You'll hear different things. You'll laugh and you won't hear that line. And they'll.
Or you'll watch a different ensemble member.
Exactly.
Or there's so much.
There's so much you can
watch. We were talking last week with Lee Kitz, who's doing The Father at the Vortex. Mm.
Oh, I just saw that show. Marvelous.
Did you see it?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I saw it on Saturday.
Looking forward to it.
Highly recommend.
The point I was making, though, was that the audience doesn't want to wait till the last show. We hear about it all the time. Oh, I'll come see you on your last performance. That way it'll be much better.
Right.
Well, no, it won't necessarily because of what you have just pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
Every show is different, and every bit of every show is different.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When,
so come see all of them.
Yes, come see every single one.
Well, that's I've known people who have done that,
and I fully support those people. Yep.
Thanks, Mom.
Well, thanks, Mom. Love you forever. Real life.
Don't forget your boyfriends, girlfriends, wives.
Yes,
husbands,
no, it's true.
Lovers.
We're just shouting out to our moms. No, for sure. I mean, anyone, any support we love.
Yeah.
Friends, family. I mean, we can't. You know, at the end of the day, also we do this for the audience. Yeah, I mean, we do it for ourselves and everything, but there's something exciting about knowing that your boyfriend, girlfriend, mother, XYZ are coming, and they're at that show. I mean, there's nothing like that feeling backstage of just like, they're there.
Maybe my favorite is just like somebody you have like no idea who they are, and it's like just like this little kid who's in high school is like, I want to do that. I want to be that person. I'm like, ha-ha. Yeah, no, just kidding.
No, for sure, though. Yeah, people come up after to you afterwards, and it's very lovely.
Well, it's really kind of inspiring, and it does put a little electric charge in you when you know somebody special's in the audience.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, whether it's somebody in the industry who is maybe going to see you.
Right. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Somebody in the family who never thought you were going to amount to much.
Yeah.
And here you are proving... Thanks, you're worth. No, that's not what I was referring
to. I know.
No, it's okay. We just know each other really well. Yeah.
I would guess that the show is intimate enough that you would by now.
Yeah. No, it's pretty Insta friends.
How long have you been rehearsing?
Since December 10th, somewhere in that world.
Okay. Me was a lot later than that.
Yeah, he was later than that, and then I actually left for a week and a half. So, you know, but we, again, like I said, we kind of just clicked at callbacks and just there was this mutual respect. And, and we...
We're talking and I don't know ever if I can, since callbacks.
Truth, and I don't know if this is okay to say, but I think we were, maybe I'm speaking for you, but like rooting for each other after callbacks.
No, definitely.
Like I, you know, we read with multiple people and that was fun, but I was like... I hope I get it. I really hope it's that Tyler kid. So like, and we became like friends on Facebook and he was like, Bonnie? And I was like, Collide? So we just sort of instantly clicked and like, and then we just got to know each other and now we're just like best buds.
Yeah.
Who fall in love every night. Casually.
And die.
And die. Because
fall in love and die.
Yeah. As you do on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Let me ask a loaded question here now in light of your admission already to doing so many shows.
Okay.
Oh, you thought I was going somewhere else.
We did.
Just because we've gotten it.
We've gotten it a million times, so I'm just waiting for you to ask.
I set it
us.
Up earlier when I said don't answer something you don't want to.
No, we're open books.
So the question the question is really what's next?
Oh, okay.
If you've got that many shows that you've done that quickly, I would reason and assume, which may be wrong, but I will, that you have things lined up. Yes?
Oh, yeah.
He is much more booked than I am. I'm sort of just taking things slower, also because I just moved here in XYZ. I'm actually choreographing Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat next at MTS. Yes, come out to auditions the second weekend in February and the workshop January 27th.
Uh-huh.
Little plug for that. So that's my next really big project for sure. And then I try to work in film as well. So as hopefully that starts to pick up, my sort of theater will be a little quieter and I'll start auditioning more in film in and around Albuquerque. And then I work, like I said, I work for Albuquerque Little Theater and for Mother Road. So I'm always involved in theater if I'm not on stage. But I'm sure something will come along that I will do. But at the moment, I just have Joseph that's like officially lined up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then Mr. Busy over here.
Well, so as far as lined up for sure, I got cast as Rudy in Bent up in Denver. And then I'm going to be working on King Lear with them, working on the musical Hair, hopefully being cast in it. I have a callback this weekend for a musical up there. And then I have my sights set on some stuff here, which I will not mention.
Don't want to jinx it, but yeah, we both have our sights set on some shows, but we're not cast, so we don't want to jinx things. But there are definitely we're not going anywhere.
No.
I'll leave it at that. We're definitely not going anywhere.
Oh, and then Jamie. In the last five years.
All right. So, Jessica Quinlan.
Yes.
Tyler Cable.
Yep.
Thank you for being with us here today.
Thank you.
Break a leg on your opening.
Thank you.
I do hope to see it at least once.
Thank you. We hope you do too.
Yeah.
That does it for us this week. Join us again next week as the Albuquerque Theater Guild's podcast will keep you up to date on what's playing and bring you special features like performance interviews and a bit of insider knowledge. After being held up by snow and family illness, we look forward to talking with Patricia Crespin about her play El Corrido de Jorge, opening at the National Hispanic Cultural Center on February 1st. That podcast will start early, airing Friday this week. If you've been enjoying our programs, please like us, comment, and share with your friends on other social media platforms. Until we're together again, go see some live performance art, and we'll look for you right here next week.